good afternoon, honorable members and our special Department of Health and the Department of Health from the social clinic by the MEC. We are just sorting some IT things. The social clinic just came to check something that is compatible with whatever. So just 5 minutes. In the absence, if they were succeeding, we will then have to come to the presentation because of the problem with the IT. But we will definitely start in the next 2 minutes if that is not sorted out. Honourable members, we are proposing that we start because we are delayed by the challenges of the IT. After all the formalities that we do, then we head over to the state. They will have to present it outside the technology. If the ISA board will come and assist, or I think they is coming to assist next week and the ISA is going to assist. Thank you. Honourable members, I'm proposing that we stand whilst the IT people are still something is up, because we do have a chance. When they have sorted out the whole issue of the screen, we will then have them to get the solution to the screen. But I'm also understanding that all of us have got the copy of the plans from the state. We will then, can I get an indication how many of us don't have judgments? They are all in front of you. But you said it's just a couple of them. All right. We also have the stage led by the MEC and the HOD. Our Department of Health has been with us since this morning. Everybody that is around has been here with us this morning. In welcoming, we are going to, and then going to start with the introduction for the benefit of those who may not know some of us. I'm Dr. Njoa, I'm the Chairperson of the Professional Committee on Health. Next to me is Lucas Majama, who is the office secretary. And the extreme right is Moses Mwabe, who is part of the research team. Next to him is Mr. Nuhuhle Ngomane, who is our contact advisor. The lady who is holding his arm at the extreme back is the Secretary of the Study Group of the African National Congress. They call her Bubbles, that is her trade name. And next to her is Mbali, who is our committee assistant. I will then give over to the honorable members to introduce themselves. And after that, let me see how you introduce yourselves depends on you. Otherwise, you'll do that after the honorable members have done that. Over to the honorable members.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, honorable members, and our guests. My name is Mr. Chen, member of this committee.
Good afternoon, my name is Hanis Malik, I'm a member of the committee.
Good afternoon, my name is Ishma Salela, member of this body.
Good afternoon, colleagues, my name is Samalan Kosa.
Good afternoon, my name is Mashwani Kutarta, member of this committee.
And the President of Health from the state, over to you.
Let me start first by thanking the committee for giving us the opportunity to present ourselves today here. My name is Benima Lakwani. I'm currently the LEC responsible for health in the Tech province. And let me also acknowledge the presence of the National Department of Health. And maybe prior to us dealing with the brief, I will quickly introduce officials from the Department of Health who are with me here today. With me here we have Dr. David Mundang, who is the head of the Department of Health. And then we have Mr. Mufia, who is the Chief Financial Officer. And behind me we have Dr. Stella Makela, who is the Deputy Director General responsible for the health services and strategic health programs. And next to her is my head of office, Mary Juliet Shoki. And then we have Mr. Bergman, Aaron Bergman, who is Chief Director responsible for infrastructure. Then next to him we have the DDG responsible for corporate services, which is Mr. Sipo Tagati. And then next to the Chief Financial Officer we have Mary Juliet Shoki, Chief Director responsible for supply chain procurement.
brother said when we were first this year, I think it's important that they also do this before.
Thank you, Mother Moshe, honorable members, colleagues from the Free State. I'm Dr. Kevin Carter, DDG, National Department of Health.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, MC from Free State, HOD, and colleagues from the Free State, I'm Jeanette Hunter, the DDG for Primary Healthcare at the National Department of Health.
Honorable Chair, my name is Smith and Amanda, CFO of the National Health.
Good afternoon, honorable members, MEC and HOD from Eastern Cape colleagues. My name is Valer Reddy. I'm head of corporate services at National Health.
You will pardon me, Eastern Cape has just left, so
many apologies.
Well, that means that this one.
My name is Father Stefan, Minister of
Health. Honourable members, I'm a journalist from News 24, Members Paul.
Hello, Chairperson and members, I'm Faith, I'm from PNG.
All right, over to you, MC. How you are going to delegate who's going to do
what the president said earlier, so now I hand over to you. Okay. Thank you so much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Committee. In terms of the brief, we were to present on the items, and we have chosen to follow the following chronology. And maybe prior to us doing that, each chair could also assist us in confirmation that honorable members have copies of the presentations on what we are going to talk about today. Just in terms of the rearrangement, the first presentation would be on human resources and emphasis on community health workers, followed by infrastructure project as requested in terms of the brief, followed by the committee report on the oversight visit that was done in 2015, and then that will be followed by the financial management report, which captures issues that were raised by the Auditor General. Then it will be supply chain management and procurement, and you will also relate then lastly to progress and challenges regarding implementation of the Ideal Clinic Initiative. In terms of this brief, there was no particular guidance on what issues should be captured on, for example, human resources, with emphasis on community health workers, and the committee would also request maybe to be pardoned if we tend to more detail than was requested or less detail than was expected. And this would be with regard to the presentation on human resources, on financial management, on supply chain, and yeah, I think it would maybe be those. But we would welcome any other question that would be based on whatever one is already mentioned that was not clearly guided upon. I would firstly make an assumption, Chair, in terms of...
Can I just check if you want to just go to all these documents in terms of how they have... I have a question. So, I don't know. Let's continue with all the... I think we could see ideas, clinic, all of us have got one in there. Can we start with that one? Why are we waiting for the one?
Thank you.
can we start with the election, if that is fine with you, so that all members can have the seats and the percentages. We will then all members start with the presentation on the IGJ meeting. I think this is the one.
I was at a point where I needed to confirm whether in line with the correspondence we have 3 hours to present so that we get guided on time and for us to be able to time our presentation accordingly.
Well, as much as we would be very complicated for the issue of time, but we don't want to exert pressure on you. Yeah, but knowing very well that there's another person after you. Yes.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. What we would then do, we would try to run as quick as possible over the presentations, whilst we would still welcome questions over any other item that we may have missed. The very first presentation on progress and challenges regarding implementation of the IT Clinic Initiative. Honorable Chair, that presentation would be done by the DCG, District Health Services and Strategic Health Programs, Dr. Spell. Okay, I'm just behind you. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members, Honourable NEC. I don't know if this will be reflected or we'll be talking then off our documents, but I'd like to say that what we have in front of us then is an executive summary of that which is contained in the presentation. We will be talking to the IEL Clinic Initiative, which was started in 2013 by the National Department of Health, to systematically address the deficiencies in primary health care facilities and to improve the quality of care, quality of service rendered. So this report will then give progress on the IGO care program within the Free State province from the financial year 15-16 to our current financial year 2016-17. The expansion plan over the M-term period, challenges and quality improvement plans that were developed to achieve progress. Now, just a quick overview in terms of the Free State province and our facility. We have 5 districts in the Free State, consisting actually of 221 primary health care rendering facilities to a population of 2.2 million uninsured from a total of 2.7 million people in the entire Free State. Our primary health care facilities are distributed as follows within our 5 districts. In Tamufutanyano, we have 73 facilities. In Metro, 45, Lilliputla District, 43, Fresile Dabi, 39, and in Kanu, we have 20. So our expectation, of course, taking cue from the national mandate, is that all our primary healthcare facilities are expected to be ideal by the end of the financial year 2018-19, and it is obviously an incremental expansion plan that is expected of all the provinces, and the Free State has to contribute to that. So as stipulated in our Free State Department of Health ATP, the province has enrolled, or will enroll rather, a specific number of facilities into this program over the 3-year period. We actually started in 2015-16 with 100 until all these facilities reach their ideal status as at the end of the financial year 18-19. What we then have is a table there which is showing our scale-up plan per district and then the total that we expect to have scaled up by at the end of the financial year expected. As you see in the table there, I'm not sure if it's that visible, but in the year 15-16 we enrolled 100 clinics with that particular breakdown of 20 in Fresile Dabi, 20 in Lilliputla, 20 in Mangaung Metro, 30 in Mabutsayana, which is our National Health Insurance Pilot District, and then 10 in Khali. So we enrolled a further 52 in this current financial year, and then we will then be able to enroll the remainder at the end of the M-term period. Now, the definition of an ideal clinic, maybe I should just say this for emphasis, If that clinic shall be fined an opening on time in the morning according to set operating hours, and shall not close until the last patient has been assisted, even if this is beyond the normal closing hours. Staff by healthcare providers who treat people with dignity, providing community-based health promotion, visiting, promoting hygiene, and taking all precautionary measures to prevent spread of disease, having reasonable waiting times, providing a comprehensive package of good quality health service every day, having basic necessities such as essential medicines, and referring people to high levels of care timely when required, one which the community would call our own clinic rather than government clinic or state health facility with good infrastructure and having sufficient bulk supplies. So this essence has then been captured in the form of a dashboard against which all our clinics have to then be measured against. So we came up then with 10 components that would define the dashboard of the ideal clinic, and we measure ourselves against the question of administration, the question of integrated clinical service management, the availability of medicine supplies and laboratory services, human resources for health, support services infrastructure, health information management, communication, district health system support, and our relationships with the implementing partners and stakeholders. These are the broad 10 main components along which we are then able to define a clinic as ideal. But there is, of course, elements and that flow out of the 10 components. Now, if we then go to the next slide, then these elements are divided into the following categories. There are those which we regard as vital, and those that are regarded as essential, and others that are regarded as important. And I think when you now come to the definition and attainment of ideal, what's critical is that the vital elements should all be attained, and that has been a struggle with most of our facilities within the province. So the vital elements are those which are extremely important and they require immediate and full correction. These are elements that affect direct service delivery and clinical care to patients. For example, the ability to resuscitate patients in such a clinic. If it's not there and you have everything else, we would not then grade such a clinic as ideal. With the essential elements, they require resolution but within a given time period. And these are process and structural elements that indirectly affect the quality of care given to patients. The important ones require resolution also within a given period of time, but they affect the quality of the environment in which healthcare is given to the patients. And there was a categorization that was agreed upon by national consensus where we then give a weight to these various elements, upon which a clinic would then be scored silver, gold, platinum, or diamond. Now, in 2015-16, as I said, we enrolled 100 of our 221 facilities onto the Ideal Clinic Program. And just to say that this is a contribution to the entire national target of enrollment, assessment of clinics, and then ultimate accreditation of the facilities across the board in our country. So we enrolled 100 of our facilities. However, based upon the targeted facilities to actually attain ideal clinic status, the National Department of Health reduced the number of facilities to be assessed in the program. So there's enrollment, and then there's assessment, and then there's accreditation. So in our province, we had a cross-district peer review process which happened across the various districts and provinces within the republic. And out of the 100 enrolled facilities, 46 of them were selected within the Free State province. We've got 15 assessed in Victoria Derby, 4 in Israel Busa, another 4 in Mangaung Metro, 13 in Kabupusena, and 10 in Khabib. And you would note that the 10 that were enrolled in Khabib were actually all assessed. So the total was 46 out of the 100 enrolled, which means we still had 121 facilities that actually have not been enrolled yet. Now, the following slide essentially establishes the process or outlines the process of the ideal clinic assessment. To that end, teams were established in each district of the 52 districts participating, which were meant to be the core drivers of the process of assessment within provinces and within districts. However, the cross-district peer review process then roped in people from various provinces and districts to cross peer review in other provinces. So we have this ongoing assessment internally, but this particular one happened across districts and provinces. So what happened there is that the PICRM team assess each facility enrolled into this ideal safe program to determine the baseline, and then after that assessment with the local teams, they then develop a quality improvement plan and monitor its implementation. And I must just add that, you know, when colleagues from other provinces were coming into other provinces, such as we also went into other provinces, there were sometimes areas of dispute saying, no, but this is not how we scored and so forth. And some of these challenges we then brought back to the national department so that we are able to have a standard platform upon which we are aimed to assess each other as a country. However, with the assessment done, we developed QIPs and we then support facilities as against the ideal clinic dashboard. And then the peer review of the same facility by another team happened, and then we gave the facility a score. So essentially then, what I'm going to be talking about is that scoring which happened for the 46 facilities. However, we have enrolled 100 and we are still to enroll the remainder, which is the 121, because our total is 221 in the province. So on this slide, we then show the number of facilities that were actually assessed, the number of teams that went out, and we see that the participants in our province was teams from the Northern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, that came to the Free State, and I think the Free State itself went over to Mpumalanga. Now, if I take it then district by district, in Mahung Metro, we had Mahung Metro comprises three sub-districts, Bloemfontein, Mokabelo, and Tabachi. So these listed here are the clinics that were actually selected for peer review through the cross-district peer review process. And you would see that our scoring, maybe I did not mention this, but in that first slide of vital, essential, and important, you would know that you ought to get 100% on all the vital elements. That is critical. If you do not get 100%, then it means you disqualify. So our initial assessment, as you see from the district results, the internal district results, we actually were rather hard on ourselves. That which you see in red was our internal assessment. So in Bayswater, for an example, we would have scored ourselves 67%, but then when the teams came over, they scored 81%. But still, that did not place us as ideal. So that was the baseline from which we were departing. So I'm not going to read every other clinic, but suffice it to say, this was Mangaung. As we see with Lelibutswa, of course, in the case of Lelibutswa, we had scored ourselves, for example, at the Cabo Clinic of Ronville, quite high, and then the teams from the other districts then scored us down. It really depends. So it's a rather objective process from which we learned that there must be some refinement of the criteria so that we are able then to be as objective as possible. Now, if I go through, I've shown you all the five districts, including, of course, Sanyana, which is important because that is really our NHI pilot district. The intention of the 10+1 NHI pilot district ultimately is to learn those lessons so that we are then able to roll out as a country to the 52 health districts in the Republic. So, you will see that with Sanyana, when the district peer review came over, they gave us rather disappointing scores in places like Morakong, Pinamoloi, and so forth. And we then are able to summarize from that why we scored so badly. Now, on the slide, that actually shows the diamond, platinum, gold, silver, or not achieved, you would then see that the summary of our second reassessment then, which happened in April of 2016, it showed that from that initial assessment, we then started working on a whole lot of things and developed QIPs. So in Fresnadi, out of the 15 facilities that were selected, one of them scored platinum, In Tawutayan, out of the 13 that identified, 10 of them scored platinum. In Galit, out of the 10 selected, 7 scored platinum. And then in the total of that, we have shown that 22 out of the 6 facilities selected in the free state scored platinum and gold. Now, I'm sure your concern would be around Lijel Puta and Mangaung, because those then did not manage to score any one of the categories of IPO. Now, we then went further then to be able to assess ourselves against ourselves as a province, and we found that obviously our best performing district was Khalid District, followed by Mangaung Metro, even though they did not get the ideal status, but in terms of improvement of scores with the number of facilities they had the second best performance, and our worst performer was Lijel Puta District, which means our efforts now started to focus on Lijel Puta. We went even further, drilled a bit deeper into sub-districts, and found that our best performing sub-district within our province was Metumahulu, which is in the Saffelberg area. The second one was Kabelo, and if you look at the worst performing sub-district, was in Sotodo local municipality in Mabungutanya. So this is what we got at the assessment, but I must maybe at this juncture then add, we as the Free State have had quite a number of infrastructure projects that we ought to have operationalized at the either the end of the past financial year or the beginning of this current financial year. Because one of the key challenges that was hindering our achievement in the Ideal Clinic was the question of infrastructure. So most of these areas which are saying are well performing are in the process of operationalizing their brand new infrastructure, which now then brings a totally new spin into the question of reassessment. And at that end, in fact, we are going to be writing to the National Department of Health and requesting a reassessment of our facilities, and we believe this picture will change completely. But I think when it comes to the infrastructure presentation, we'll talk to those facilities. Now, if we then go to which are these facilities that did very well, we have a clinic in Hebron. It's called Best Bay Hebron Clinic, another one, Referring Hospital Clinic, and we also have Tusanang Clinic. And if I was mentioned, for example, Tusanang is one clinic that we partnered with Sahong, the company in Saddleburg. They also assisted with some renovations and so forth. So most of the infrastructure is almost like the rate limiting factor. Once you sort out your infrastructure, then most of the things fall into place in terms of the attainment of your ideal clinic. Because if it's too small, you don't get the necessary personnel to fit in. If you don't have a storeroom for medicine, so infrastructure is key. Okay, so these were our best performing clinics. As you see across the length and breadth, we have a few things to be proud of. But of course, we are concerned about the ones which did not do well. So in summary, just to paint a picture of what I've been really explaining through the graph, 22 of the 46 facilities that were involved actually reached ideal clinic status. However, we did not reach the diamond status. We reached the platinum and the gold. Khalid happens to be our best performing district in our province, and Lijel Puta is the lowest performing, which means, you know, most of our efforts and investments ought to go there as well. However, the status determination results show that the majority of facilities in our own metro were actually performing above 66%, but clearly need more than that. Now, in terms of the challenges, as I said, infrastructure, and we have picked up really that most of our facilities would have been those type of things that we had inherited from municipalities, for argument's sake. We have provincialized all of our clinics. However, they are the old type of infrastructure that you would have inherited from the municipality, which would have been four-roomed type of clinics. Now, there's a massive investment in infrastructure within the province. I think within this first quarter, April, May, June, we operationalized about 8 or so clinics, and we are on a continuous move to do so. So once the infrastructure is right, then you find that as a catalytic move to a city seeking attainment of their guildhood status. Another challenge is really human resource for health. In light of the national imperative of reduction of compensation of employees, virtue of the current economic situation in the country, it has been a very difficult balancing act for us as a province, where on the one hand you know you need a personnel, you then build bigger facilities, and then you don't have the ability to appoint as you could and as you should. So we have a very serious challenge on the human resource health. Of course, during this period of rollout of the Ideal Clinic initiative, we never had a dedicated fund for an Ideal Clinic. There was never enough to budget within the departmental allocator share for the Ideal Clinic, so it has to be part and parcel of the daily budgeting process, and it really was rather difficult to attain. And of course, our slow supply chain management processes to procure Ideal Clinic equipment, as identified within the laboratory process of the Ideal Clinic, that when you have centralized procurement processes, they don't filter down to the clinic level, where ideally we would have loved the clinic manager to be able to procure her own toilet paper, whatever it is, but we have not been able yet to evolve the SCM processes to the clinic level. Now, in terms of scale-up then, as you see in this particular slide, we have said our total number of facilities 221, and we would like to scale up over the years to the total. I mean, as I said, currently we have 100 enrolled within the program. In 2016, we'd like to add a couple more within, you know, outlined as in this table. Samuputanyana is our pilot district. As a matter of fact, we were supposed to have FLU scaled up completely, but we still remain the challenge of the funding and infrastructure, as we have outlined already before. Sorry. Okay, I'm going to still pass this slide because it really says much of the same. So, in terms of now lessons learned, it's the question of, we are aware that there's an Ideal Clinic indirect grant, but indirect means that there's not yet been provincial allocation to it. You have to actually, by request, access that fund at a national level. So the lessons learned for us is really one, the question of budgeting for this particular program, the SCM processes over this particular program, and then we are having challenges as well with weekly monitoring of the Ideal Clinic progress. Okay. Now, QIT. On our quality improvement plans, we have been able to do cost analysis of our Ideal Clinic requirements, but the question of provincial allocation dedicated for this program remains a challenge. The question of allocating a budget for Ideal Clinic equipment on the equitable share is another QIP, but now making sure that our acquisition plans, our procurement plans, are including and factoring the Ideal Clinic equipment. The prioritization of procurement of not just equipment but other consumables, and then aligning our departmental infrastructure plan with the Ideal Clinic is also another QIP. And on this slide here, it is showing the costing. So all in all, we have a couple of slides per district which show how much money we would need that has been actually drawn from our quality improvement plan to attain our status in all our five districts. So I won't give a figure, suffice to say that they show district by district how much it is. And then in terms of the infrastructure budget to refurbish and maintain our clinics, there's also a slide which shows what we intend to do over the MTEP period and how much that will cost us. And so, yeah, in a nutshell, I think these are the issues, but I really believe that we are on course, provided that honorable members can assist us to get funding for this program. Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll make all the presentations. Then after that, we'll then ask questions.
whichever one the Honorable Chair would like us to deal with, we can gladly do so, or maybe we can go on to the HR one, or whichever we are fine.
Honorable, you do have
copies of HR.
Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We shall then start presenting the HR one, and the HOG shall deal with that one, the infrastructure, and the committee report prior to him handing over to the CEO and the Chief Director of Supply Chain Management. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, esteemed members of the committee, NEC, colleagues from the National Department of Health. Honourable Chair, I'm going to take the committee through the presentation on infrastructure, on HR infrastructure, and then we will then deal with the committee's recommendations, as well as the that they did in pre-facility. The outline of the presentation on our chair is going to be the summary of post status, appointments, service terminations, overtime expenditure on allowances, and then we'll then give a feedback on community healthcare workers. The next slide is attempting to show us as to what the status of the post is in the Free State. We have about 17,680 posts that are filled, and the vacant posts are 3,760, and we have a vacancy rate of 8%, which we are well aware that is not looking good. Now, of the total number of posts that are filled, we have about 407, which represent the community service officials. Just as a demonstration of the budget for compensation of employees on our chair, we have for this financial year a budget of about 5.8 billion, which is allocated to the COE. And so far we have spent about 1.9 billion with 124 million worth of commitment, and we therefore have an available budget by the currency of 3.9 billion. Chair, I'm just going to run through as quick as I can on the posting aspect district, if you'll allow. The Bethlehem District institution, in private healthcare, we have about 942 posts that are filled, we have about 335 that are vacant. Bethlehem District Hospital, there's about 281 that are filled and 40 vacant. Food at District Hospital 98 and 21, Barais District Hospital 118 and 21, Borlo District Hospital, we're sitting at 182 with a vacant post of 30. Leisurely Boudoir and Abbas also emphasize that as per the presentation by the previous presentation, you will have noted that Leisurely Boudoir is one of the districts that are problematic, and this was also echoed by that was done by the committee last year. Family healthcare, we have about 1,141, and we have vacant post of 290. Garcia District Hospital, 154, Mohawk District Hospital, 62-8. Nala District Hospital, 66-15. Susano District Hospital, 143-40. Mangaung Primary Healthcare, 1,497 to 181. Xavier District Hospital, 357 to 45. Dr. J.S. Moroka District Hospital, 342 to 71. National District Hospital, 585 to 59. In Kabupaten Tanyano, which is our pilot district, as it was that area, in primary healthcare, we have about 1,616 posts that are built, and against the 416 that are vacant. Elizabeth Ross at District Hospital, we have 196 to 40. Idemo and District Hospital, 80 to 11. J.J. Newberry District Hospital, 50 to 7. Mutatuan at District Hospital, 78 to 9. Kepulon District, 180 to 29. Melela District, 57 against 5. Putulua District Hospital, 61 to 19. Norikan Tabahiri, 170 to 22. Elizabeth District Hospital, 152 to 18.
Navi district, which is the last district, primary health care, we have 589, and we have about 84 vacant posts. And Alvin Sula District Hospital said here, I think I'm supposed because the figure here looks abnormal. We have three vacancies that we have filled, and we have those that are vacant, 194. Now, this year, Chair, the process of appointing some of this hospital facility is well underway. This is a facility to remember that we are about to commission. And I think that will be happening in the next month, yeah. The Amman District Hospital, there's 92.5, Erebeni District Hospital, 54.12, Stoffer Lutia District Hospital, 57-14. Now, if we could quickly take a broad at the regional hospital and academic complex, you'd realize that the Tumelo Regional Hospital has got 563 posts that are filled, and there's 228 that are vacant. Wongani Regional Hospital, there's 801-210. Free State Academic Complex, there's 754-237. Investors Hospital, that's 2,207 to again 399. And even here, Chair, maybe one should also pause to say that the challenges that we're experiencing in the city, insofar as financial constraints, is making us, or it's making it difficult for us to actually be able to build some of the schools. We have got a direct impact on training, and where the Health Professional Council is finding it difficult to upgrade us on some of the disciplines that the university is supposed to be offering. And it also had an impact, of course, on the joint establishment agreement, or the agreement that we had in terms of what the university is supposed to be paying in terms of revenue. And I'm sure that will be highlighted by the CFO as he's presenting. The Lunomi Regional Hospital, we had 1,680-303. The Italian Regional Hospital, 356-353. And Mufumaji Mana Mbidi Regional Hospital, 31282. Appointments, Chair, as of April 2016 to July 2016, we've been able to appoint about 3 medical officers and specialists on a permanent basis, about nursing professionals, personnel 59, dentists and pharmacists about 8, allied health professionals about 10, and other categories about 18. Now, the community service, we've been able to appoint 13, 16 nursing personnel, 6 nursing personnel, oncologists, dentists and pharmacists 7, allied health 2, and we have not been able to appoint, there was only for any other category there. Interns, we've been able to appoint about 4, dentists and pharmacists, interns 3, allied health professionals 4. The special officers or special professions, we've been able to appoint about 86 medical officers, specialists, and related, and then we've been able to appoint about 1 aligned health professionals. The registrars, we've been able to appoint about 15. And for the total number, which is 122, has been appointed by the Minister and selected about that. We've had, however, several donations that we have needed to take on as well. We have about 83 personnel that have been donated as a result of contract expiry, 5 as a result of death, dismissal, retirement, only health, about 5 of them, and dismissal, and resignation 122, and retirement 122. So in total, we have about 137. Now, during the same period, we set an expenditure on overtime as follows. Normal overtime, we spent about 12.7 million, fixed overtime about 77 million, and in total is about 90 million. And the reason earlier why I was saying that the vacancy rate is problematic is that it also has, it impacts on the overtime expenditure of the department. Now, just a quick look at the extra cost expenditure on allowances around the same period. Different electricity spent about 7.9 million. On acting allowances, we spent about 1.4 million. Intensive and leadership about 18 million. And we spent about 3 million on qualification for bonuses. And on loan credits, we spent about 2.7 million. Now, if we quickly then go and look at Honorable Chair, the feedback on the community health workers progress for the healthcare request or the instruction by the committee, the outline of this presentation is going to be as follows. It's going to be the introduction, the second payment, training of community healthcare workers in the district province. Now, we started implementing a new criteria of the community health worker program end of September 2014. The criteria for admission was as follows. Whoever or to be trained needed to have a certificate proficient in two languages, English and any of the local languages. They must be at least between 21 and 55 years old. They must be African citizens and they should actually be able to be fit to work this country. Now the program, the community health workers are expected to work strictly on the community. In the community and not in the facilities in line with the PhD engineering. On the relevant payment, honorable members, there are 9 NGOs that have been awarded contracts which are reviewed annually for 3 years as of February 2016. The NGOs are contracted to manage the administration and HR issues of the CADAS in the scope of private payment, monitor and supervise activities for community-based services. The labor reporting by NGOs has been changed to facilitate timing, payments of items and payments are not done well in time. You remember that there was a problem, particularly in Sofwan when the committee visited about the payment certification. As we continue, the 950 community caregivers are receiving a title of 1,850 per month according to the Ministry of Education. The 594 community healthcare workers are receiving 1,000 900 per month. The 104 adult nurses and 44 adult nurses who provide clinical support to community health care workers are getting 3,000 nurses per month. They are out OTLs, they are outreach team leaders, Private payment is only done after receiving the report on the work done. An update on the training of community health care workers. The training plan is according to the need for coverage of every health chain in the world. Training has commenced in the district since 2011. 96 community healthcare workers from the Jewel Bula were trained in phase 1 in 2011. From 2011 to 2014, they were in the world coached by OTS. Assessment on phase 1 was done in 2014. Patients were competent and proceeded to phase 2 in 2014. In July 2015, the decision has commenced with the training for the qualification. 61 unfortunately failed their initial assessment and 32 were rearrested in 2016. Additional 55 CTGs were trained in phase 1 in March 2016. They will be assessed in December 2016. The training of 11 CTGs from the Sultan is scheduled for November 2016 on a community healthcare work program. 4 CTGs have been trained on HIV counseling and testing in March 2016. The 11 CTGs will be trained on team management in August 2016. I think that brings us to the end of the HR mental inclusive of the community healthcare work program. Chair, if you allow, I will then proceed to give a short brief on the infrastructure for the department. We are requested to give a report on infrastructure management for 14-15 and 15-16 financial year. Now the next slide, I'm not sure if the members are for this. The next slide depicts the source of funding, which is the MTEP 2015-16 MTEP summary of funding. It shows us on the left the source of funding, which is your health facility with a resident grant, the infrastructure enhancement allocation, and the EPWP. Now, in 1415, the Alaska budget came to about 612 million. And in 1516, the Alaska budget was 589 million. Budget for 1617 is 516 million. Yes, so that is the budget for 1517. There is of course a concern on our chain in as far as the diminishing budget allocation for 1516 and 12. And of course, I think the DCG also highlighted that because if you look at the program on Ideal Phoenix, that is infrastructure, and I think she was upfront in saying one of the infrastructure is right, everything else needs to be falling into place. I have the next slide as the infrastructure project is for 14-15 financial year. As the fourth quarter 14-15, the summary of expenditure is as follows. We were able to spend about 96% of our budget, and there are reasons why the expenditure was like that. We will give those reasons a little later in the slide. The next slide, allowing chair. Well, the next slide is actually depicting the performance, the total performance, in as far as the expenditure is concerned. And that is what I mentioned earlier on in terms of expenditure of 5%. Now, comments on the expenditure for 1516 are as follows. The expenditure by the end of the financial year was at 95%. The under expenditure by the end of this financial year was due to a commitment from medical equipment orders for Allen Solar Hospital, the one that I did to aim on, and the Benomi ICU, which we are about to open as well, that we not get here due to late delivery of in fact, at the time, the process had not had been laid. That's why it was alluded to as a slow supply chain process. The CEO is due to non-filling of the infrastructure, HR capacity infrastructure. Given that, Honorable Chair, I must say that the process is at one stage to make sure that we stand on this HR capacity by avoiding invoices that were still being processed. In other words, commitments already that were there. The status of slow spending projects. We have an maintenance program, medical equipment, as well as consultation of infrastructure personnel. I'm just going to quickly run through them. Under maintenance program, projects under this program were reprioritized to augment the funding of the mechanical insulation program. And one shift that has been set to treasury for approval of two fund sheets was feedbacked on the 23rd of February 2016. With medical equipment, or delays in procurement of medical equipment for clinics and identified hospitals, appointment and issuing of orders for supplies started in the beginning of February this year. In February 2016. Compensation of infrastructure personnel, delays were experienced in the recruitment of skilled personnel for infrastructure. Advertisements and polls closed in October 2015. A short listing was done and interviews started in January 2016. And we are in the process of analyzing the process. I think the next slide is just a demonstration on the human resource application on Dora, the third book has done. We have a total number of posts that have been approved, which is 53, and 53 is under this on Dora, and 13 is on voter fund. And we only filled about 18 under DORA and then 3 on Boosted Fund. So we have posts that are filled, that need to be filled, sitting at 40. And this is the question that I will show you later on. This is, in summary, the presentation on the infrastructure on our website. On our share, the report that we put together that was responding to recommendations that the informing me when they disturb the province, particularly to the community in Sultan, the Israeli Bhutan district, the medical level, and the Pedonomi Hospital. I'm asking here that, according to the brief, we were requested to only concentrate on the first two, which is the clinic as well as the medical level, as far as the recommendation. The first recommendation, in as far as the clinic from the committee was that we need to address the issue on infrastructure and self-sorting. And I can report now that today we have managed to do minor revisions to the clinic. In as far as we painted the clinic, we fixed the ceiling, we've managed to fix all the security doors issues that were there. In as far as I'm concerned, we installed furniture and also fixed issues that were in the environment. We've installed the water tank, the JoJo tank, but the challenge here was that there was no water that you know was flowing into that tank. So we managed to talk to the municipality to assist us in constantly cleaning up that tank. We fixed the roof, we put the fence around the clinic, and one area that I also was not happy about was how the medical aid waste was being treated. It was just put in a container. So we managed to create a palisade sort of fencing around it, which is lockable, and the key is with the staff. I've talked to the issue around the office manager. There was also an issue around the EMS. There was an indication that patients were waiting from 8 hours of the morning as early as 4 o'clock to actually waiting for the patient transport to take them to. Yes. So we managed to review that in that we noticed that that clinic was the last clinic to be, or the patients from that clinic were the last patients we picked up. And they were waiting there from 2 o'clock, sometimes 4 o'clock. So what we've done, we've reprioritized the times because the transport should first deliver the patient that is in distance, and then they would then go back and fetch the patient at around 11 o'clock because most of their appointments were starting around that time. We also requested to prioritize issue the staff shortage. Now, according to my opinion, the clinic only requires one personal nurse on our chair, which the district has not been able to fill due to financial constraints because they were projecting at the time the expenditure. The post has been prioritized and it will be filled the financial year. On the issue of EMS again, what we've done, we've also taken or removed EMS from the partial that is there. So some of the patients are able to be seen in that partial. As far as the challenges of payment and training of community healthcare workers, I think I've already alluded to the one of training of community health workers. But with the payment, I think that was also resolved. It is now done constantly under the NGO Lifeline in the state. I paid the monthly stipend of 1,850. And of course, we will consider this community healthcare workers for phase one training in the last quarter of the financial year. There was an issue around the fact that one patient was interviewed and they indicated that they knew nothing about the MAPONET. To that end, I think the Maritimal Health District, which includes the Mokosikomoten Clinic, as of June 2016, registered about 1,097 out of the 1,144 clinics on MAPONET. So it is about 81.6%. So we did go back and address that issue. On the agent address of the administrative players in the jury, the district management team was stabilized by appointing an acting district manager at the time, which is Mr. Kala, who is supported by other managers. But I must also indicate that at the time we had a problem with the incumbent on the post, who have problems but managed to get an answer, so will be able to appoint now at this money in the I think the next one was on the medical depot. The recommendation by the committee was that we needed to address the shortage, the staff shortages at the medical depot. I must indicate that we need to of children of about 7.6 million on our type of feeding through with a funding internal recruitment process in this financial year. The goals are 5 pharmacists, 4 pharmacy assistants, 5 supply chain, and 2 HR practitioners, 2 cleaners, 3 security officers, and 1 supply chain practitioner. We were also instructed to address the bottlenecks that were hindering procurement and supply of medicine. Here, we want to indicate that the system that we are currently using is just like that. It's an old system which does not allow cash checking. So what we've done is we have a pharmacy assistant in the warehouse responsible for ensuring stock rotation in terms of test expiry, test out, and people. So the issue of expiry medication and all those sorts of things has been resolved. In terms of reviewing the levy charge, because that was another challenge, there's only 2 million worth of capital of compensation that was done in the hands of the medical depot, which was responsible for their operational costs. We then, as a government, decided to give an compensation of 40 million, but we are currently reviewing the manner in which the medical depot is operating. We sent a team to the Western Cape to come and benchmark as to how they managed to move their medical depot from a trading account into a directly in the department. So we are going to be implementing that to the report to the effect that it's going to be us to do that. In so far as the bottleneck on procurement and supply of medicines, that is the one that I've just alluded to, that we have actually embarked on that process and we should be able to do that within the next 6 months. I think we've been under 6 months to make sure that that's done, and hopefully that will assist us in making sure that we have a good one. I want to thank you. Oh, sorry. Anybody reminded me that that is done now. That process is done now, but we're going to review it again in 6 months. Thank you.
Yes, Honorable Chair, only 2 presentations are left. Maybe the one that could come in now is the one on financial management, with particular emphasis on issues that were raised by the Auditor General, and plans to address those, and that presentation will be done by the Chief Financial Officer. Thereafter, it will be the last presentation by on supply chain management and procurement. It will be done by May 9th.
We are all.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and esteemed members of the committee. There was not really a guideline on how we should present financial information. However, as a department, we resolved that maybe we should present the historical information to the situation that has been prevailing in the department, for the simple reason that the events in the department have played themselves out in the media, and it's really important also to show some more of the contributing factors as far as finances are concerned that have been affecting what has been happening. I think the previous presenters have also indicated the challenges relating to the conversation of employees and how difficult it is we have decided that the approach should then take that form. The first slide of our presentation shows at the bottom. It might be difficult to talk to me, but I'll try to make sure, without pointing, but I'll try to direct members to the point that I'm talking about. On the first slide at the bottom, the ROS at the bottom shows the total budget of the department over a year of 2012 financial year up to 2016 financial year. And the total expenditure that the department has often been able to spend. And it will show that the department has been spending on average 99% of its budget. In 2011-2012, we spent 98.3%, 2012-18, 98.1%, and slightly decreasing in 2013-14 to 97.3%, and it increased to 99.6% in 2014-15 and 2015-16. Now, the point here that I would like to present is the conflict between the compensation of employees and goods and services. It will be realized that compensation of employees has been increasing from 63% in 2011-2012 to 65% of the total budget in 2016-17. And the implication has been crowding out of goods and services. And due to fiscal discipline initiated during the 2014-15 financial year, the compensation of employees increased by 1%. This resulted in safety level pressures emanating from lack of appointment of personnel. I believe the committee is aware, my colleagues have also been talking about the pressures that they have related to appointments. Unfortunately, in the current financial year, due to fiscal discipline again, the department was instructed to reduce its budget of compensation of employees by further 0.05%. And in the future, outer years and tier budgets, there's an exercise currently taking place that is trying to establish what will be the impact if we reduce our budgets by a further 1% to 2% over the MTF period. Now, the beginning or the top rows, they show the compensation of employees, these are goods and services. These are actually the actual performance which have been audited to 2015-16 and the increase of the budgets allocated to those economic classifications. Compensation of employees in 2011-12, the actual expenditure was 4.3, whilst goods and services was 1.7, and compensation of employees was increased at 13% in 2012-18, whilst goods and services was increased by only 3%. In 2013-14, compensation was increased by 4%, and goods and services was increased by 11%. 2014-15 compensation of employees, 2%, was goods and services was increased by 15%. In 2015-16, 5%, 6%, 6%, 3%. This at this stage is showing a bit of stabilization. In the past, we have been fighting a lot to ensure that we balance our budgeting. But if you look at the same slide, honorable members will also realize that the actual budgets that have been allocated, and if members could just bear in mind that the figure that I was talking about in the previous slide are for outcomes, the actual expenditures. But these figures that I'm talking about in this slide are the budgets that we have actually allocated at the beginning of the financial year, which changed during the course of the year because of pressure that came as a result of either compensation of employees in 1 year or as well as related to goods and services. Now, here we are just analyzing allocations towards goods and services. And in 2011-12, the actual budget which was allocated initially was 1.7, and in the following year 1.9 or 4 in 2013-14, and 2014-15, 1.7 billion, and 2015-16 it was 2.4 billion. And the other figures are now figures that will be allocated in the outer years. These were not yet 2017-18 going forward. But the point also here that one would like to convey is that if you look at the CPI, which is the figures that we are seeing from the provincial treasurer, the CPI has been stated at 6.4 in 2011-12, 2.8 in 2012-13, followed by 5.7, 5.6, and 5.4 in 2015-16. Now, if you discount the those inflation rates, you are already saying that our actual of the allocations that we've been making have been 1.6, this will be 1.7 in 2011-12, and now 1.8, this will be 1.9 in 2012-18, 1.8, this will be 1.9 in 2018, 1.6, this will be 1.7 in 2014, and 2.3 will be 2015-16. The figures that we have used here are the figures that have been given to us by the National Treasurer. However, I must also state, honourable members, that the inflation rate in the health sector is not similar to the general inflation rate. At this stage, one has done some research and read some articles. I've established that the inflation rate in the health sector is hovering around 9%. And I think the exercise that is currently being done by the National Department of Health to determine the impact of the cut of 1% and 2% in the outer years on the budget of the health is precisely talking to the very same thing, because the figure also that they are showing is 9%. Now, if we had to take the figure of 9%, it means the figures could have been even worse than what they are. All I'm saying is that whilst the risk nominal increase in the budget of the goods and services, but in general terms, that is not the case. And that's why we're always having the conflict between compensation of increase and goods and services. The increase in upwards is also reflective of the pressure that we're finding ourselves. If our members look at the bottom rows, it will be realized that our unauthorized expenditure over the period that I've been talking about, we're staying at 61 million. It increased to 135 million in 2012-18, then reduced it to 32 million in 2013-14, and 11 million in 2014-15. However, in the last financial year, 2015-16, it picked up also to 31.8 million. The unauthorized expenditure, as members will correctly know, represents the overshooting of the budget. And this also is an indication that the budget of the department, whilst we are trying to deal with it in terms of responsibilities of handles, it is also difficult, because this is demonstrative of overshooting of the budget. But what's also important is the next line is this way across, which relates to the invoices which have not been paid at the end of the financial year. In 2011-12, the figure was at 400 million, 2012-18, 559, and in 2013-14, 657. And let me indicate at this stage that whilst it would look like the upwards will increasing during this period, I must also indicate that the Inter General had also advised the department during this period, because it was indicated by the Inter General that the completeness of the aquas are not determined. So it might mean that the figures were actually more than these 400 million and 559 at that stage. The only time that we managed to resolve this problem was in 2014, when we determined that at the end of the financial year that our was sustaining at 657 million. And in 2014-15, it dipped to 217. However, again in 2015-16, it picked up again. It moved from 14% to 15%. The bottom row actually shows that if could we have spend money or pay the actual overshooting of the budget could have stood at 262 million in 2011-12, 694 million in 2012-13, and 689 in 2013-14, 228 in 2014-15, and currently at 405 million in the 2015-16. In summary, the slide just demonstrates the pressures that that the Department of Health are facing at this stage because of the budgetary complications. Now the next slide deals with the scaling, but we do not want to be just in this respect. Just to indicate also that in 2014-15, the capital indicated that we spent 99% of our budget. But the comment I'm trying to say that I want to convey that with regard to conditional funds, we spent 99% in 2014-15, and in 2015-16, we spent 98.9%. The HOD explained when he was in his presentation on infrastructure, some of the causal factors or contributing factors to the 98.9%. But with regard to the critical share in 2014-15, we managed to spend the whole allocation, and in 2015-16, 99.9% was spent. Now, this concludes the financial information, but then the audit outcomes. And let's start, Chair and honorable members, by apologizing on typographic, maybe it's not a typographic, then oversight when we were typing the qualification matters that's being in the description, that they are not congruent under asset management and employee benefits. My humble apologies for writing that, but they will not change the content of the message that I want to convey at stage. In 2014-15, the department was qualified on three matters: real expenditure, asset management, employee benefit. With regard to the real expenditure, the department made payments in contradiction of the supply chain management requirements in the current and prior years that failed to investigate the full extent of the real expenditure. In terms of the progress, honorable members will pick up that we indicated that progress is 20%. I need to emphasize this measure. The irregular expenditure has been one of the problems in the department. And in terms of our register, it comes as far back as 2009. And the Auditor General has been qualifying us on completeness of this register. Now, to clear this matter, we needed to do an investigation. There's a procedure that needs to be followed. It requires human capacity to do the investigations and come up to the final assessment, which will already conclude whether somebody must pay back on this matter. And like I'm saying, the cases were so many because we wanted to deal with the completeness matter. So in the current financial year, we could not resolve this matter, but with regard to asset management and employee benefits, we resolved these two matters in great. But if you look at the next slide, the department is still qualified on three, matters. This time we have added appropriate new equipment. The problem with the acute revenue is that our internal system of patient administration and letters crashed sometime in November, and we could not recover information in time for OCT. So this letter was raised by the Auditor General, and it was a research qualification matter. Now the commitment, there's one aspect relating to the infrastructure component of our expenditure, where we encountered problems with regard to the commitment, and we were also qualified on this matter. But only a legal action. We have, honorable member, already completed our audit action plan for many audit qualifications. Unlike the previous years where we would wait for the provincial treasury to provide us with a template that we should actually use, this case during the audit process, we already started engaging on the matters that way of problem of problematic later, and we have started. And I must say that with regard to the irregular expenditure, we have agreed to the Auditor General that they will actually provide us with a guideline in terms of how we should deal with this matter once and for all and pay it. And regarding the group revenue, the process of constructing the information on the system is way underway, and we will be able to resolve this matter. Likewise, the commitment we indicated that we need to compile registers that both manual and electronic, that is electronic system which is about IRM, but we also want to make sure that we've got a proper backup by having manual registers. We believe that we will be able to resolve this matter. But there are other two matters that the Auditor General raised as a matter of concern. The financial sustainability of the department and the payables. With regard to financial sustainability, the concern was also based on the matters that have already alluded to relating to the accruals and the unauthorized expenditure. The next slide just indicates the amounts related to unauthorized expenditure and the accruals, and I've already elaborated on those figures. Now, with regard to predetermined dossiers, problem two was clarified because the Auditor General could not determine the reported indicators at the 48% of all the indicators could not verify them, so we qualified on problem 2. However, on problem 5, we received an unqualified opinion, and on problem 7, there was a disclaimer. And mainly it was on the indicators that related to the medical labor. Further, there were the concerns relating to the the preparation of the annual financial statements. This matter related to many misclassifications which were corrected during the audit, but Auditor General raised it, which requires them that we should support measures to ensure that the misclassification is monitored on a monthly basis, and also the budget is at 1 million of unauthorized, and some of the quotations which the Auditor General was not satisfied that the quotations were obtained, even though the matter was more technical than content. I have raised all these issues just to indicate that they were not qualification issues, but these were matters that were raised by the Auditor General that we have to ensure that they are action plans that we deal with to ensure that you know, they do not repeat themselves, because if Auditor General can keep them up, I think they may have further result in qualification matter. But one of the issues that is important, which I think I must also talk about, relates to the 30-day payment, which the Auditor General established that not in most cases, or in certain cases, we could not pay our suppliers within the required 30 days. And this I must also indicate that it has to do with the cash management. And unfortunately, it's not only confined to the Department of Health. It's a provincial matter. We have to request cash from the provincial treasury. And not, we have established that not in all instances, when we have worked funding or cash, we are able to get it. And this matter, we have further communicated with the provincial treasury, and it's not affecting the Department of Health alone. We are just departments which are affected. And another way forward, Chen and the honorable members, I must report that we have started with our auditor syndrome. We have requested all our facilities to replicate the issues that are appearing in the audit report. We will be monitoring the implementation of the resolution and recommendations of the Auditor General on a monthly basis that we have done in the past year. And there was success if also one considers that could it have not been of the system crash, our qualification methods could have reduced in the current financial year, considering that in 2012-13, our qualification matters were 11, and we have managed to reduce them to 4 and 3. And we also have established an internal control unit, which is doing spot checks. And one of the issues that we would like to make sure that we are implementing in the current financial year, having now received all information from the auditor statement, is the implementation of consequence management. And in this regard, it's not only measures to correct the fatigue of the wrongdoing, but also would like to ensure that now we take disciplinary action, because over a period of last year, we have been having regular meetings with all financial managers in the facilities where we have been facing some of the issues and where we have established now that they have actually transferred some of the issues that we have talked about. We will definitely be increasing the disciplinary measures. So this concludes the presentation on the financial measures and the audit. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would want to ask the presentation on the headline game management. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Member. We have started the presentation talking to supply chain management and procurement, indicating the mandate of supply chain management. We know that the supply chain management environment is a highly regulated environment and is a highly controlled environment. That is why then we started by indicating the mandate. And also, we will also be talking to, according to what we were requested to talk to and the interest of the committee, it will be flowing from that mandate because it specifically talking about the effectiveness and efficiency of supply chain management, as well as we are saying that the supply chain management system itself, it should be, say, equitable, transparent, competitive, and cost-effective. And we also indicated to the regulatory framework that we also comply with. And with the regulatory framework, the interest is more on the PMA as well as its regulation together with the BEE, because those two regulations, they are the ones that are informing the interest of the members when we are supposed to be talking to how do we transform or how do we contribute to the development and the transformation using procurement as a tool. And we have indicated that through the application of this principle of the PSA regulations as well as the EEE code, the department has succeeded to secure competitive prices. However, it is very much important to indicate that with the EEE code, when looking at how we are supposed to be advancing the emerging micro enterprises as well as the qualifying small enterprises, the way the points are allocated. As the department, we can indicate that by applying all those regulations, then we successfully, with the contract that we have awarded as the department, we successfully awarded about 95% of the contract to the businesses that are compliant, which are the EMEs as well as the QAEs. And it is also important to mention that the department mostly procures highly specialized commodities. However, commodities were identified by the department as one of the strategies whereby we are saying that with these identified commodities, we need at least the 70% of the budget that has been allocated to those commodities. We need to direct that budget to promote and develop the black business and for the economic transformation of the black business. So the systems that are put in place, oh, let me start first by the introduction of the systems. Poor planning and ineffective implementation of procurement steps as one of the intersections, the prolonged turnaround time in the procurement of goods, services, and work. I think my other colleagues have alluded to that. Cost effectiveness and valuable money not realized. Ineffective contract management is one of our challenges, and the shortage of human resource, which is hindering the flow of work. And what is it that we are doing as a department in order to address all those? As a department, in Supply Chain Management Directorate, we have established a unit which we call the SCM Performance. And this unit is working very closely with the Internal Control Directorate that the CFO has spoke about in order to identify all the irregularities in the supply chain management processes, also in order to identify the ineffectiveness as well as inefficiencies in supply chain management. And what happens thereafter, there is a tool that has been developed, which we call it the scorecard, and with the scorecard, we have indicated all the areas that we are supposed to be looking at, and each and every facility across the province, the health facility across the province, there is an assessment which is done by this unit, and it is assessed by the Internal Control Directorate, whereby each and every institution is scored on the performance of supply chain management. And the main aim is to identify all the areas that are in the service delivery and also to improve on that. In the case of the turnaround time, which was also a problem, which we identified as a department, because the subvention management processes are taking long, we also developed a new protocol whereby we have indicated the time that are supposed to be taking to perform each and every process, and that is also metered, and each and every institution is also measured on that. Regarding the challenges of the prices that we are experiencing that were not cost effective, the department is also doing a proper market research and doing the price check in order to get the prices and selection of potential suppliers from the database. The number is increased in order to open for a bigger competition. By doing all those, we are trying as a department to get all the prices that would be referring to the cost effectiveness. We are trying to open up for a bigger competition. We are trying to open up for fairness and all those elements that I have indicated that I said that they have been tried. And I think I have also spoken to the supply chain management inefficiencies. With the inefficiencies, what we are doing as the department, the development of the demand plan are happening before the end of the financial year or before the start of the new financial year, whereby just after the project has been concluded by treasury and the department has received an allocation. So the process of development of the demand plan, which is also informed by the ATP starts at that time, and the plans are concluded on time, so that at the beginning of the start of the new financial year, then all the plans have been approved, and we also have developed and consolidated the acquisition plans. And with those acquisition plans, that is whereby the bidding takes place, and the identification of the common items is done, so that the contract can be concluded on those items. So the government has started also directing that with the medical consumables as well as the medical equipment, we are going to centralize procurement, and of which that process has already happened. The target that we have put as a department, because this is one of the challenges which was also highlighted by other colleagues of mine, especially when coming to the equipment that is supposed to be transferred for the ideal clinic, then the centralization is done in order to address all those. As I speak, by the end of August is the deadline for all the order to be issued, because I have also indicated that the process has already resumed of centralizing the procurement of medical equipment. And we are hoping that we will be winning with the process of centralization of the medical equipment and procurement as well as the medical consumable procurement. With regard to governance, good governance within supply chain management, as the department on an annual basis, the officials in supply chain management, they do sign the code of conduct. And further than that, we know that it's not only the officials in supply chain management which are the role players in the entire process, there are other officials who are role players. And those role players, they are made to sign the declarations every month when they are dealing with the supply chain management protocols, as well as they sign the confidentiality form. Should the department suspect any non-compliance to FCM codes of conduct or false declarations and non-confidentiality, the matter is reported to Fraud and Corruption Unit for further handling. And also, as a department, in order to uphold on good governance within supply chain management, what we have done from the previous financial year, we did locate all the supply chain management practitioners, and the rotation was happening in the institutions that are in the same town. So the officials were rotated from one institution to the other institution. And when we look at supply chain for infrastructure delivery and internet, the department has completed the processes that address the infrastructure delivery and internet. The appointment of the project manager has been finalized. However, currently, the department is dealing with the process of contracting the contractors in order to do the infrastructure delivery and maintenance, of which all these contracts will be assisted in the maintenance of all the our buildings or all our facilities in the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm not sure, I don't know whether there's anything that you want to suspect before members ask questions, or they can ask questions.
No,
Chair.
No, Chair, there will be any lecture at this time, so I suppose we will be ready to work on questions.
Members state presentation from the City Department of Health. Any pictures? On the government, or of Ms. Kosa, on the government.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to AMC and the team for the presentation. I just have two questions with regards to the finance presentation. If you go to the page on budget allocation, which speaks about accruals as a percentage, it's a bit of a difficult one to read, because you've reported accruals as a percentage of your real value of goods and services. But if you look at 2014-15 to 2015-2016, that amount increased quite substantially from 1.7 to 2.3 billion. So the percentage, even though it says a 2% increase in accruals as a percentage, the amount of increase is actually quite substantial, because the accruals increased in those 3 years from 217 to 378. There's 161 million rand increase in accruals. That's over 7% in 1 year, and that's quite staggering. And so the question is, given that massive increase in accruals, what is going to be done? Some intervention? It's an unsustainable growth in accruals. So why did that occur? Such a substantial percentage, and what's going to be done to mitigate it? That's the first question. And then the second question relates to the page on, speaks about commitments. We basically, I can know, I can see from any, which speaks about the fact that there wasn't a proper register kept for commitments. If you can speak to that, because of course that is a huge problem, and how that, first what the consequences are going to be for that, and then also how you remedying that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My first question is with regard to the vandalized a clinic. The presenter never mentioned the causes for the vandalization of clinic. Was it because it's not utilized, or was it violently vandalized? Can you assist us there, and even to indicate to what are your plans in this? Because I think with regards to clinics, I don't think you are doing fine. You have enough. The one that is vandalized is also needed. What do you want to talk about? What are the plans to in regard to renovating of that particular clinic? The other issue, Chair, is with regard to inflation CFO. You mentioned that the inflation that you are experiencing is just different to any other inflation that we experience in the country. What type of inflation you talk about? Demand was push inflation. What type of goods and services are mostly affected of that, those types of inflation that are affecting us? Lastly, Chair, with the on supply chain, she has just reported that there are lot of vacant posts and they are working under stress, and I'm looking at supply chain as a very sensitive issue to understand that when they are very tired, as she was reporting, I think a lot of mistakes are going to be incurred in that regard. Thank you.
And I'm very much and welcome the presentation message behind one issue about outside human resource. Start just to get an indication whether the department is able out of the 17,000 odd filled positions to disintegrate it in terms of clinical and administrative, so that we can understand the percentages in terms of vacancy rates around this area of work. The policy figure is 18% vacancy rate, but is it possible to get was an indication around the clinical and the administrative in terms of that we understand which part is mostly affected. Coming to the issue of community health, which we search in the first. I'm trying to understand, I don't understand it. I've read it twice, three times. I don't understand firstly how many community health workers do you have as a province. I'm trying to add the figures here, it doesn't make sense to me. If you could just clarify it. Whether you have done a proper audit of the figure, and do you know how many community workers are there in the province? Have you conducted an audit? And how many you have? And then secondly, why is this work being carried? Because the question I'm getting out of our politics, it is strictly done by it has been outsourced. It's not an internal work done by the department. It's done through the NGOs, the NPOs. Why is it like that? And then what are the conditions of service of those community health workers? Where does accountability lie of those community health workers? How do you evaluate the performance And where do you locate the watt-based THT transistors within the context of the re-engineering of primary circuit within this? Within this, because I can't find it anywhere. And how is it being managed differently from the one that you've put into the NGOs? And how does how do they relate to one another in the performance of the duties on the ground? And how many watt-based systems do you have? And how many wards have you covered thus far? And how many are still outstanding? And when do you intend completing them? The condition of serving, the benefits for this community, what benefits do they have? How secure are their jobs? Do they have any benefits? And if they do, what types of benefits? And if not, why? But that's around the issue of HR. And then coming to finance, I'll try to link finance with what was raised as a challenge around the implementation of some of the core areas of IT engineering, because issues of our finances. The auditor general is saying we are not financially sustainable. Which means if you're a private company, you're supposed to be sequestered and to go on and close business and to go home. That's the implications of it. Because you're not financially sustainable. What's led to that? Because I don't think it's a matter that has been there from the beginning of the department in 1994 to date. What led to the department to find itself in the state of affairs? And how do you intend resolving this matter? Taking into consideration that the accruals are, it's a yo-yo up and down. It's not stable. It's not stability. No. And taking into consideration what impact does the issue of the problem in supply chain have on the financial sustainability. Extend that you are able therefore to make irregular expenditure. Because irregular expenditure does contribute. And if you don't follow the law, violate the laws and the supply chain processes. Something that you're supposed to buy this thing at time run, you buy it at a run. That affects us as financial sustainability. Because there's no cost effectiveness, there's no value of money. To what extent has this had an impact on this problem of supply chain? I see that in infrastructure you're saying you want more money. How are you going to manage to get more money? Because you don't have personnel. You don't have capacity. So why do you want more money that you can't be able to manage it yourself? You are unable even to fill positions even in infrastructure with money available. Because some of the reason why you're saying you understand on infrastructure, you're saying it's because you could not feel it. There is compensation of employees on infrastructure. And then there is a result you've understood on infrastructure. But at the same time, you don't have that capacity on infrastructure. Where is the problem? Just make us understand where is the problem. Why are you unable
to build that capacity within the infrastructure units so that we are able, as a result of that, to effectively spend the money, but also build capacity in the supply chains to make sure that it's available for money. It's cost effectiveness in everything that we do, so that we're sure that the money that is being allocated is used effectively and efficiently, and there is value at the end of it. There is maximization of it in terms of making sure that we don't buy things that are not supposed to be bought because we don't have such capacity within the land. So the accruals. First, the regular expenditure, it has been cumulative since 2009. We are unable to resolve it. What next? Since 2009, we are unable to reconcile. And as a result, we are unable to take decisions what must be done. How are we going to deal with this? I don't see the immediate action now that was when I say here you are still going to investigate the findings about the regular expenditure. Actually, you have been in Kerry 2009. Why won't you investigate now? Why have you not been investigating over the past many years? And you want to investigate now? Are you telling us that now all these years 2010, 11, 12, 18, 14, 15, you're fine with it. You want to start investigating now. Why? I don't understand it. Is it a problem of management? Is it a problem of leadership? Where does the problem lie? The legislature doesn't understand it. Well, I don't understand it. Where are we sitting? And then the accruals, how do you intend addressing these accruals? Because I don't see where you're going to get the money. I don't see where you're going to get the money to deal with these accruals, and I don't see how we're going to be dealing with this problem of making sure that you deal with these accruals. How are you going to address this and make sure that you without compromising success, they are able to address these accruals at the same time, but provide and improve the service that the community needs on the ground. But the ideal, I'm not sure whether you're trying to tell us that the national introduces a project or a program of ideal training without funding. The unfunded funding, that's what you're telling us. It's just that they can't do it. It is an unfunded mandate. Nice times are saying, I did Phoenix, go see how you deal with it. There's no money, there's nothing on your own. But that's the impression I'm getting. Is that the case? And if that's the case, National is here, they will explain why they decided that you must engage into this work and not providing any support, any funding, any assistance that you need in order to be able to achieve an ideal status at the end of the day. And interestingly is that your pilot size is the one that is not doing well. And my understanding is that there's grants that is available at the national level to assist you to make sure that you do better. But it seems to be the opposite on your side. Can you get an answer why it's like that? that grant is not being given to you, Free State alone, was it? I find it strange to all the problems that we've had here, we are different. You seem to be different. Maybe I treat it differently. We must just get an understanding that might be treated differently. And if you are, what is the reason for being treated differently? Because I'm getting that impression as if you're not treated in the same way. Like the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the general said that's what I want to make a comment on later on this week.
Well, I would have
voluntary before this criteria. You know,
Because I think most of the people that volunteered chair before, they didn't have music. What are we saying about the service that they contributed when there was no attendance paid that time? And if they were not considered by the government, why? Why do we have to do that? Because, you know, sitting where I'm sitting now, I just remember when we were visiting the state, we went to one of the clinics. I forgot the name of the clinic, but it was they were volunteers. Yeah, if you remember, some of them they didn't have magic. And they were doing a great job, a good job. And they were saying that they are not receiving their presents. When I look at the document today, seeing the criteria that they are using in terms of appointing interviews, I get worried. Because we can't just abandon those volunteers when, at a stage where there was no one to take care or to do that critical work they were doing, they volunteered their services without any payment. So I think we need to be very sensitive sometimes when we deal with these issues. I'm ready to tell, I think they can explain, they can give us the answer on whether they consider them or not.
So my side is all for them to ask another question. On the presentation, on the key times that we had in financial presentation, the document is not numbered, but it's a contributing return to qualification method. Several last page. And paragraph 8. Well, let me see. What is here mentioned? Project managers not competent. Commitment, infrastructure commitment, the department is not capable to maintain accurate commitment register. The following will contribute to time. The project managers are not competent, lack of proper contract management. And then you go to E, continental grant, spending not for purpose that it was intended for, though not significant. I am not a CEO, but my understanding is that if you are given a first rank to go and buy, then that first rank can happen in orange. And decide to go and buy a bullet that is not significant. My concern also is that in the page, the remedial action, if you don't go to the page, the remedial action that you are tabled here, they don't have any time frame. You pardon me if because I was at this shop. Because this page which I've just read, it's very specific. It reflects volumes about the state of financial in the Department of Health in the state, maybe in their district.
and the leadership. I think that is that's the last one is that if somebody can translate to me. As one of your people,
And where the
National Department, saying that they have come in and respond some of the questions that have been asked. That would be fine. Premier, over to you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry. Over to you.
Okay, Premier. Well, I am the president.
Premier, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and let me also thank Honorable Members for the questions. May I suggest, Honorable Chair, that the presenters would give responses to questions related to their presentations, and in particular areas I would also come in to give certain responses where maybe one would believe that maybe the questions are not completely responded to. And that will we make sure that we do justice to the questions raised. From what I have counted, there's 45 questions that would be responded to, and we will do our best to each and every one of them. Some are a bit tricky, particularly where we have to respond, whether it's the leadership, but we will try to address those questions as well as by Honorable Simon. The people would be the first one to go. With regard to questions related to accruals and the commitment.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and the members. That's quite a lot of questions from a finance perspective. Maybe let me just talk to the issue relating to accruals. I agree with the Honourable Member that made the statement that is breaking at the bottom of the site, that it increased by 2%. That's not regression. I mean, it's just taking a trend, saying, but if we go from the previous one, you just spoke to the my apologies, the actual figure should be based on the difference between what the accruals in the past year have been, what is the accruals in the current year. But the issue about accruals is that it borders a lot around the budget allocation. Some of the issues that would happen is that, or maybe let me start by indicating, most of these accruals are invoices which were not paid at the end of the financial year. That is the 31st March 18 of the financial year. Now, what could contribute to these accruals would be sometimes that a service has been rendered, however, an invoice has not been received. In such cases, we will not pay this amount. And sometimes it will be a matter where they are disputed with regard to the invoices that have been submitted. In the department, we normally monitor the trends in commitments throughout the year. Every month, we will actually come out and ask all the institutions about the invoices that they have received, that they have not yet processed. And this most will be related to the Now, we could understand that in the department handbook, it's possible that service could be even that in a month, and we are not able to pay immediately within 30 days. And I've alluded to the fact that excessive payment, wrong payment, is a problem in the department, and it's not only in the department, but throughout the province. Sometimes when we request cash, we are not given the adequate cash that we're requesting, and it also contributes to the situation. However, I want to agree with the honourable member that this was must be managed. In the previous years, I indicated that these figures were far more than what is happening in the day. That's why the qualification on irregular on accruals in the previous years, because the Auditor General was actually indicating that the figures that we have actually shown are not correct. But since 2014-15, we have managed to deal with the qualification on accruals. And that shows that we have actually started managing the accruals correctly. I don't know whether it covers the question, but long and short of it is that the budgetary pressures have an impact on the processes of the department. And sometimes there are certain services in health that you cannot stop. You must continue, even though the commitments are quite crazy. So, that is not adequately answered. I would appreciate a further follow-up question on that. The second question, or related question, was on the inflation rate. How did that come to the percentage that I'm using? And I don't want to try to imply that it is not known by members. But the issue is there are various categories of inflation rate in the different category economy. And the specific inflation of India, which is being used in the medical sector, in the health sector. And if I have looked at the research, I've researched some documents, as it is my responsibility as a financial manager in the department, to see what the actions that we are taking imply to the budget. Now, one of the sources that I would like to say, honorable members, relating to the figure of inflation, is the South African States of the SEPA SA report of 2010. I think it was issued in December. In that report, it clearly states that the weighted CPI in the health sector is 11%, not even 9%. And some of the research and that one was into in the recent ones actually showed that the inflation is hovering around 9% at this stage. And the other factors of some of this inflation include the consumables, include even the professional specialists. They are contributing towards the inflation in the health sector. I think like I indicated that the template that has been received from the National Department of Health is actually saying that we should calculate it at 9%. I'm not an economist, and I'm not saying that I'm the authority on the source of the information. However, this is what I'm reading, and this is what I'm taking note of since I'm waiting to give the health sector environment. The next issue related to the sequestration, possible sequestration of the environment, which is again related to the approvals. Indeed, I've addressed to the issues of the approvals and their impact. If we were a private enterprise, yes indeed, we should have been sequestrated if we look at the magnitude of the approvals that we are giving. More so that it is expected in government that we should only commit what we have been allocated, which is true and correct. And we have been working on managing the accruals that indicated that prior to 2014, the figures were higher than this, and the Auditor General could not even express an opinion on them. However, if you look at the recent report of the Auditor General, it is certified that the figures that we're giving him are accurate. And we will continue to work on these figures until we have managed to work within the allocated budget. And I must say, one of the things that could be done if one were working in the private sector, what one could actually do is actually implement cost-cutting measures. And normally, your first cost of duty will be to cut employees. If you want to contain the problems, you won't go to weekend services, because weekend services are the ones that are driving the business. But in our case, let's say public sector, the cost of compensation of employees is also being directed from other departments like the PSA. Now, I deliberately show this slide of conflict between goods and services to the members so that we all appear and understand that the decisions that have been taken outside the sector are actually impacting negatively on the business of the sector. However, we as the department are committed to dealing with these problems that are facing not only the Department of Health and Education, but many others, which I must even say that some of the departments have been still quite violent on these approvals, at least to show that we are waiting on them, we have not been qualified on this. Then, the commitment, the question was raised by the honourable member about the commitments, which actually culminated in the qualification. Indeed, this was unexpected. We had resolved this a long time ago, but we were surprised when the registers of the infrastructure projects were audited in the current financial year. It was established that the system that we use in the province, I believe it's been used in the whole country, the so-called IRM, was modified at the beginning of the financial year. A new version was implemented. Considering the number of the projects that are being handled in the Department of Health, when you look into, and it is unfortunate that we picked this up at a very late stage, we picked up the information that has been input in the system is not credible. We were looking inside some of the individual projects, and you see a project which says commitment is zero, yet or the 2018 is the commitment project is maybe $100 million. However, if you look at the spending is more than $100 million. That's when we now getting into the system and trying to figure out why we could not. And this was the first time that we encountered this kind of a problem. But then when we investigated, interrogated what happened, we were told that the IRM is a system which is prescribed by the treasurers. It's a national treasury system. Was modified, and there was a problem when information was migrated from the old version of the IRM into the new version. But having said that, this is just a system. We should have actually had people who were looking at the information and who could have actually realized the problem when in time. And this is what we are saying. The project managers were not committed enough. They should have foreseen this kind of a problem. And in the audit agenda, we are proposing that instead of relying solely on the IRM, we should actually introduce a manual system also that can even complete. And I must say, this system of, or this model of using both manual and electronic registers did actually work. I can quote where we're dealing with the contingent liabilities. Our contingent liabilities in the process are handled from the Office of the Premier, the state advisors. They are using the electronic system. But because it was handled outside the department, we actually introduced our own register, which was manual. And when we were comparing the financial statements, we actually immediately identified the discrepancies between the two. We're able to engage them and solve the matter. So that's why we're not being qualified on that. So all we're saying is that we have had competent project managers who would have dealt with this and that this matter could have been avoided, but this is what we're working on. But I think also, honorable members, it was mentioned that the capacity in the infrastructure is still being built. I think it was mentioned. Of these, this one issue relating to the audit action plan, which is one of the countries. I agree, Chair. However, let me indicate that this was just a presentation to the committee. The actual document has got all the necessary fields that must be complied with. One of the approaches that we are following this year is that we should actually have a catching mechanism that we could get and a preventative mechanism and the monitoring mechanism. So there is that document. I'm very anxious to actually submit that document, but it's quite loose. And at this stage, because we are doing it before even the trailer is directing us to do the audit action plan. We are early, we're doing it earlier than they have been directing us. We have distributed the items on the audit action plan to all facilities in the province, because we don't know who will be audited, which facility will be audited in the next financial year. But we want them to cover all the issues that were currently raised by the auditor general.
Because I may say slip my mind. I don't think it is correct instead for the CFO to say there is a document that is not information, that this was for the presentation to the committee. Because the committee is calling you to get the information. I'm going to play to conduct our oversight over you when we are just saying, if I can go to an extreme, a general information. No. We are here, and maybe we disinterested. Majority of us in this committee are former headquarters. So health is here. At times you may ask questions that in people that have got expertise, like sales, you think that children questions. To ask those are questions that make or break any health sector, and therefore any information we will need. And we will those are what I'm just supposed to make a follow up and watch the and to say it's possible just simplify version that has got the information of the time frame, because we must follow that up. So I thought it's important that I really question that, because so that the others, if they've done that, so also try and get a way of correcting when they are, it can't be correct. I think I would be failing in my duty as the chair of this committee, and therefore the committee not to raise, because I find that that was a very uncomfortable response to me in terms of the information that we needed. So I think you are at that now. I don't know who's the next MC.
I was just promised to submit. Thank you, Chair. I also within the committee and undertaking that by Friday this week, the information that is required with regard to the action plans would be submitted to the committee secretary. The following questions is the two, I suppose, related to finalization of the clinic, and here is reference to the clinic in Damaso, and then it would also be maybe a response in relation to what's considered sensitive within the health sector. So this would be responded to by Dr. Mateo, and the HO will deal with the sensitivity of the vision.
Thank you, Chair, honorable members. On the question of the once vandalized clinic, the clinic in question was actually Ntabazwe in Hammersmith in Tabufana district. This clinic was vandalized during a service delivery protest last year in November of 2015. We obviously did not have a budget within our infrastructure grant for this unfortunate eventuality. However, the district had to now make provision for from the water fund to do repairs under the their already existing, you know, resource constrained environment. So there are repairs ongoing at that particular in Darazan, but it was not provided for. It was not anticipated, obviously, due to the delivery protest that happened in that particular area. So it is not operational on the basis of that eventuality. However, it is something that the infrastructure unit is well aware of and will make provision for fully in the 2017-18 financial year. But in Harrison's, we have a town clinic and a township clinic, if you like. So we have had to redirect services as we are busy trying to repair the clinic which was actually satellite by the community.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm going to deal with the question around the sensitivity of processes. We do have the vacant post, which is highly sensitive. This is largely due to the fact that we have serious budget pressures. And the fact that we've been instructed by Treasury to reduce COE by 0.05% is also adding to the challenges that we have. The other question I think it was that vacant rate of 18% as to whether we have can give an indication as to whether it's clinical or administrative. It's largely clinical. We do not have the replicas, and I would humbly request that we actually send the exact figures to that event.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just needed to qualify that. On the presentation related to the HR status, we would personally have indicated that it is 10 per facility. We would just also by Friday make sure that that delineation is made between administrative or non, shall I say, non-clinical and clinical post and attachment stages, including the financial outlay that the department would be faced with if we were to fill all of them.
The acting part?
Oh, we will still to come to that one. So my apologies for our chair, because on the list of questions, I mistakenly put it under question 1, 2, 3, the 9th on the list of honorable Masala's question, but we can deal with that now, and then when we are done, we can then follow on the sequence of the HHW questions, if you would allow, Chair. So can we will deal with the action, the in allowance, why? Because the question from Honorable Masala was, when there are vacancies and people are being put back in the funded posts, why are you not filling the posts but instead putting people to spend money on their acting? I hope I captured teaching Tanya to deal with it.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member. With regard to that question, the response is that we have recognized that challenge. That is why we have made an indication on our presentation that from April, the beginning of the financial year, until July, we have appointed about 422 health officials. So that's an indication that we have recognized that there is a challenge in that regard. Within 4 months, we made sure that we appoint about 122. If you look at 422 officials, if you look at the template that's provided for in the presentation, there's an indication on that template that we have appointed for instance about 33 medical officers, 69 nursing personnel, 33 allied health workers. So this was actually done in an effort to address the same challenge that honorable members raised with us.
Okay.
Thank you. Please, W's. Thank you, Honorable Chair. May I also request, Honorable Chair, that as we deal with the questions related to the CHWs, we include the questions that were raised by Honorable Member, which talked to contacted NGOs for CHWs, whether they are previously from previously disadvantaged, the budget allocation, the staff members as OTLs, as whether they are permanently employed, the criteria of appointment of CHWs, and the volunteers that are not a service there. And if you are not sure, we could take them all at once. And then the two remaining questions from another member related to plans to address problems at the medical depot and the expired contracts, then we can deal with them as and when we reach that point.
No, that's right. I think it's correct to respond to the entire package of the contracts for tax and all what is detailed rather than responding in a person. So feel free to do that.
Thank you, Honorable Chen. DG Dr. Mandela will address all the questions that have been raised. I think there's about 2, 4, 6, 8, 14th that she was dealing with that. Thank you, Honourable.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. With regards to the community health care worker program in the Free State Province, maybe we should first fix the semantics. We've been using words a whole lot interchangeably within the community. We talked about CCGs, actually we're saying community caregivers, and CHWs, we're saying community health workers. And then we're also then talking about volunteers. And we're also talking about ward-based primary health care outreach teams. So I think it's important so that we then speak, you know, we bring each other on board on what we're referring to. So with regard to the community health worker program, there was a directive from our National Department of Health that we are embarking on a primary health care re-engineering strategy within the country. It outlined three schemes of primary health care engineering, which were, of course, the ward-based primary health care outreach teams, which would have comprised of community health workers, with a defined ratio of how many per household, and it also defined the number of wards that we're having, municipal wards that we're having in the country. Of course, at a later stage, we have then also recognized from a national perspective that not all municipal wards are necessarily demanding the need for community health workers or ward-based primary health care outreach teams based on the question of the poverty index. Some wards are simply affluent and it might not be affordable at the state of country to make sure that there's a team in every single ward, including affluent wards. So, when we now talk about the Free State, with the calculation that was made around the poverty index criteria, placed us initially before that was done, we were looking at an expectation of 549 ward-based primary health care teams for the number of wards that we had. In fact, at the time, we were looking at 325 municipal wards, but of course, with all these municipal demarcation board activities, we're now down to 315 municipal wards. Now, at this stage, we are now talking about teams that we have 98 ward-based primary health care outreach teams covering some wards within the Free State Province, but not all. So there's a couple of processes that happened. We initially looked at all our wards and the ratio that is expected in terms of all our wards. Then the criteria was revised to say let's look at poverty index and target wards which are actually having the highest poverty. So at this stage, as I say, we have 98 ward-based outreach teams, but our total number of wards in the Free State is 315, and we have by no means covered all our wards. Now, the question of how many community health workers do we have? I've actually got a chairperson presentation which I will give to the committee because the detail thereof, we actually regularly interrogate the type of detail at our near center meetings. But suffice it to say that we are funding this program through our HIV conditional grant, and that is why the contracting of NPOs. They are not yet absorbed on PESA. Again, that is a national question. Because you would find that other provinces may have decided to absorb and others have still maintain them through the NPO contracting process, but we now need consensus because what we are finding is a situation where when others hear that in other provinces they have been absorbed, in other provinces they are not absorbed, then it creates that sort of happiness. So we really believe we need some national consensus, and to that end, we are in discussion as a province with other provinces and the National Department to come up with a framework on what we are saying about the community health worker program, the working outreach team program, to try to standardize across all main provinces for that matter. But at this stage, the funding comes from the HIV conditional grant, wherein we are then set, given a set target of how many community caregivers are we able to actually take on board. And we have, in this financial year, been given a provincial target of taking 1,000 community caregivers. And we have been also given a set target of having 588 community health workers. Now, what is the difference between these two categories? The community health worker is the cadre that is then subjected to training as per the curriculum that has been stipulated by the National Department of Health in terms of creating the cadre that they are looking for to be able to be part of the ward-based primary health care outreach team. So, in other words, it's like you enter a community caregiver, you get subjected to the training phase 1, phase 2, and then go to qualification, and then you become a qualified community health worker. Now, we are funding this through the HIV conditional grant because that is almost like a transitioning from where we pay volunteers through the home-based care stipend that we actually gave volunteers from the HIV conditional grant. Currently in the Free State, as I said, our target for CCGs was 1,000, which means we actually get the allocation from the grant for paying 1,000 people per annum. But we have 904 currently. What happens to the rest? We get subjected, of course, to resignation and death and so on. In terms of the CHWs, the provincial target 588, which means the money allocated to that 588 through the conditional grant allocation, we actually have 547, and the variance, therefore, is 11. What happened? Some resigned, some actually then got promoted, or there were deaths as well. We were asked about the enrolled nursing assistants and the enrolled nurses. We had a target there of 150 with funding for that from the HIV conditional grant. Currently, we actually have 114. Now, the question was, are they double dipping, getting paid as full-time employees or not? No. This cadre and this category was actually not full-time on our input. But I'm sure you are aware, honorable members and honorable chair, that we have, in fact, had a challenge in the Free State of nurses that were trained, qualified, but were not able to get employment because of our budgetary situation in the province. So the enrolled nurses and the enrolled nursing assistants that were there, we were able, with the funding that was available, to take them on board on the HIV conditional grant with the sub-program at home-based care to support our community health workers and CCGs within the home-based primary health care teams. There, we had a funding allocation equal to 160 of these figures, but we actually have 114 enrolled nursing assistants and 33 enrolled nurses. So they are forming part of the ward-based outreach team supporting CCGs and the PHWs in our province. They are not double dipping. They are just getting support from the grant. There was a question also on why have we outsourced. I think maybe I have then tried to touch on it, because if you have not come to a level of consensus on whether we are placing all these cases on personnel to be permanent employees, these are questions which provincial territories, national territories must then also then assist to see, can we afford that type of a wage bill as a country? It is not really, I think, unique to the state per se. In terms of the conditions of service, within that framework that we have been crafting as the 9 provinces, the National Department of Health, we are actually trying to finalize that document. I think it's in draft at the stage, or we are assisted by the GDC from National Department of Health, where we now also speak about the very issues of the conditions of service of our community health workers and our CCGs, because indeed they are moving into households, there is danger, and so on. But as a province, I must say, even without that national guidance on the matter, when we took on the cadres and started stipulating the criteria which we gave, we have provided uniform and set aside a uniform that at least allows the cadres to be identifiable within the communities. We have been able to provide them with walking shoes. We have provided them with care kits which they carry on the back. We have been able to provide them also with a car, because one other thing we discovered, we now have a regular quarterly performance review, if you like, with the community health workers in the province. So they are able to raise the issues with the department directly, not necessarily via their NGOs. We found that their performance was limited and hindered by that machine of walking. If their base was attachment clinic, they would only walk a few, you know, kilometers within the periphery of that particular catchment clinic. But we then realized that if a ward is town and even town, they need to be able to reach those funds. So we have invested, I think, into the figure is 46 cars for the teams that we have. I'll have to verify the figure, Chairperson, and I'm sorry about that. We had 46 cars that were actually given to the outreach team leaders of our community health workers and outreach teams within our province, so that they had a common pickup point. They are put into the community as far as the farms, and then they're able then to be retrieved in the afternoons. So to that end, Chair and honorable members, we have tried to mitigate some of the unbearable and condition of service, and of course within our clinics, that should be their base. So we have created a space within our clinics where they actually work from. They are expected also to capture data from the work that they do in the household. So we have tried to provide the stationery, and part of their training then teaches them this. In our in fact, we have electronic gadgets which they use. It's not manual in capturing of data, so to speak. In terms of how do the CSWs relate to the ward-based outreach teams, I think we see the transition from volunteers to community health workers, which necessitated us to train the community health workers. It's the transition that I'm talking about. These community health workers comprise the ward-based primary health care teams. We are expected to have one community health worker covering 350 households. That's a sort of range ratio where they're supposed to actually cover the households. So in our province, we are transitioning from a period where we had volunteers, whether they be dog supporters, home-based carers, or whatever, and we have transitioned them to become professionalized community health workers as members of ward-based outreach teams. Now the question becomes, what I'm saying about those leaders that did not then meet the criteria. The thing is, if I just refresh our memory, that yes, we are saying that admission criteria is the matric certificate, proficiency in two languages, English and the vernacular, the age range, the citizenship issue, and so forth. When we came on board on this matter of vetting our NGOs at that particular point, and realizing that the primary healthcare engineering process now demands that our community health workers must be trained, and they must go through those rigors of and phases of passing phase one, phase two, and the qualification. There was a challenge now with individuals that were being subjected to this curriculum, where they could not be able to you know, proficiently be researched enough to keep up with the rigor of the program itself. And I think you would have heard in HOB's presentation that we did subject all the leaders that were in the system to testing. And I think 61% of them actually failed. It is the very data that we then said, let us first give them a fair chance and see if they will be proficient enough. So they've been subjected to training and then the testing that is necessary. And they have failed repeatedly. And we have actually sought advice now to say, what must we then do? This data does not necessarily live up to the scrutiny of the program in itself. So it's a provincial question really which we have to deal with, because my belief is that there are other provincial government departments that do not necessarily demand this type of a standard to be able to be a community health worker, EPWP, you know, within social development and so forth. So we are now trying to sit as provincial government, not as Department of Health, to say what is the exit strategy for these colleagues. And I think these are matters that not just the CCA but the rest of the country is at this point in time. Okay. How do you assess their performance? I think I've already mentioned. Certainly from where I sit as the DG of the cluster, we have quarterly performance. We have now taught them a system of reporting. They bring in, you know, a dashboard system where they understand that they are contributing to the district health information system as well. We have taught them all the indicators of the key programs, maternal and child, chronic diseases and so on and so forth. So they are actually now working with the management clinic so that when we capture the data, they sit with us and we assess their performance on that basis. So that has actually started to really professionalize the space which these colleagues are working in. So we do their assessment, but remember we also assess the NBO as well, because before you issue out a payment, you need to know that certain criteria have been fulfilled within which the contract was signed. I'm not sure if I have... Oh, yeah. In terms of the 9 NGOs that are contracted in the Free State, I'll tell you their names now and where they operate. We have... Yes, no, all of them are previously, from previously disadvantaged groups. We have the Southern Development Initiative operating in Mandiapo, Fung, and the Southern in Tanzania. We have Gold Gateway Hospice operating in Kerala and Kumelela local area. We have Kaunelo Home-Based Care Society working in Sesotho and Mansupa. We have Lesedile Chabile that's working in Lesedile Dari and Lesedile. We have Alliance Against HIV and AIDS working in Kopano, it's named Mukari and Naleri. And then we also have the same Lesedile Chabile also operating in Mangaung. We have Lifeline State, Epilepsy SA. Well, I won't say Epilepsy SA is necessarily PDI, it's a broad national organization. And then we have the Loose Crown Hospice. So that's the nine of them. So even their performance we scrutinize within our left centers, whether they are paying on time and if they are not paid because they have not submitted reports. So our dashboard on the payment here is green now. There were challenges at the time, it was quite late, I must say, but it's clean. I don't know if I've missed any one other question. Let me see.
Honorable Chair, with your permission, I would request to separate the question of Honorable Nathaniel, which I have labeled question C, because it has got two parts. It has got two parts. There are three questions from here, which should be responded to by the same DPG, which deal with what Honorable Member is to say, ideal clinic. Was it an appointed mandate? And the pilot site is not doing well. And why is it like that? And then the last one was the recent impression that the Free State is treated differently. And why is that? So I'd like to then deal with those questions related to the last three questions. The first two will be addressed by the CEO because they deal with the July expenditure and the accruals. On the very same question. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members. Yes, as we alluded to the fact that the concept of the ideal clinic actually emanated out of the Operation Pipisa initiative. This was clearly not necessarily directed to health, but it was about big, fast results. Whether in the ocean's economy, and health then decided to take it upon itself for the ideal clinic. And we went into laboratories where we analyzed what our weakness is. Now, in light of that, I'll say the ideal clinic strategy is not necessarily a project. At any one given time, we have always aspired to have ideal clinics. But we are now just conceptualizing the whole thing to say upon which basis now does a clinic qualify to become ideal. If we have always had the funding and the capacity and all of that, I'm sure we would have been ideal without being told to do so. But given that now it was a project where the entire country now says we have 4,000 plus clinics, we are going to go the primary healthcare engineering route and so forth. Did we then assign necessary ring-fence funding to it, much like we did probably with the HIV pandemic? I don't think we did. So short answer to this question is it wasn't an unfunded mandate, but we had to then derive the funding from than which we continually get in our mutual funds. So, the NHI pilot district, however, one of which resides in the Free State of Tabutayan, did get seed funding in the form of the NHI direct grant. But even that, when you look at the business plan, it had very clear stipulations as to what the seed funding was about. It was in the main concern to strengthening SCM processes, for which we trained SCM practitioners. We appointed an NHI deputy director. Why? Because the stipulation within the business plan was saying, we shall have a water-based outreach team. Now we want to conduct impact assessment studies. So we had to have an ME for NHI. There was coordinators in all the 10 districts, NHI project manager. So a lot of what we invested in was very much input-based rather than outcome-based, and it was very much seed funding. I can tell you at the very beginning of this project, most provinces got to the tune of, certainly the Free State, about 32 million rand or so, most of which then was returned to the national officers, probably because we were starting and we were a bit slow or whatever the case may be, but most of that money was returned to the national officers because it actually was not spent as it should have. And this was not confined to the Free State. Most other provinces, the money was retrieved back to the national officers. We have now got, year on year, from that initial allocation of 32 million, about 7 million, this year 7.4 million. So those are the stipulations within the NHI direct grants to see strengthening SCM trained people. So it's an input activity. Appoint an ME director, appoint a DGC, project manager for the NHI. But a whole lot of outcome based issues, they still depend on the voted funds of the department. So, by the way, this grant is coming to an end in this very financial year, and we've got to be now learning our lessons. What did we learn from these 10 districts? But this ideal clinic was not confined to Tabutayan. So it means those are four districts still had to enroll and perform to where it is expected without any ring-fenced funding. And this is not peculiar to the Free State, so to speak. So, in light of the financial discussion that has been going on, in light of the broader issues of a province which is running in, trying to meet its obligations on an accrual of like 9 years now, 7 years, this is what we had to keep. We had to keep responding to the national mandate, but it was really not necessarily funded. In short. Now, is the Free State, what was the question again?
The Free State. I'm going to try to express it the way Honorable Makarela put it. Why is that there's an impression that the Free State is treated differently? Why?
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I hope I did not try to create an impression that the Free State is being treated unfairly or differently. I certainly hope I did not, but I think I was trying to make a case for the fact that I believe we're a province that is starting on a back foot. And I believe that if that back foot were probably cleared, then we can then be able to move from a particular baseline, which would be fair. However, we are no. I think I've now given so many examples where there's matters that we want to worry by at a national level, where different provinces now seem to be doing things differently around common mandates. Some do better, some do worse, and then those that do better, they necessarily had being the knowledge, which are very different. But if we're talking the question of funding, particularly unfunded mandates, it's a problem where you're already working from back foot. If we're talking the question of community of water, transitioning from...
I do think that you would carry it since the day you are. So, okay. Okay. No, MC. Why don't we, I think now, if the President of National Parliament wants to reflect on some of the issues in terms of the identity, that would be fine, so that we are then able to release you in the second. Sorry.
The department does an overview. The national at this point, I don't think it's going to help us for the national department to respond, because the responses that we're getting, for example, the last ones are problematic for me. Problematic in the sense that it's comparing other provinces. I'm not dealing with other provinces, I'm dealing with the state. Is but dealing with Free State, not dealing with other provinces. But she keeps on referring why they're not performing, and then she keeps on dropping. Okay, that's not only Free State. It's not you who must judge it, it's not only. Because I'm meeting with all provinces. The reason I'm raising this is because you're not the first one to demand. And there is and the presentation that we receive on these areas are different from yours. And that's the content I was raising. I think I've not asked these questions of IV clinic being funded and refunded from my other provinces, because it never arose as a matter. You see? I've not asked the issue of the pilot lines, because it never arose as a matter in terms of elements. You see? So Mike, if you then begin to deal in the manner that you've been trying to handle these things, trying to compare other provinces yourself, it becomes a problem, because when they understand your situation, but you are telling us the situation in the context of others, and it's not helping us. That's the problem. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Marcel. I think we should go
back. That would be helpful, not necessarily respond. In terms of the finances for the IVO clinic chain, honourable members and MSU and colleagues from the district, just to say that the IVO clinic program is nothing but a continuous quality improvement program. The 100 and now this year version, 84 elements, as I said many times in this house, is not something, and I think Dr. Taylor also alluded to it, is not something new. Clinics always have been like that. As government in 1994, before the provinces were properly constituted, there were the strategic management teams that put in place for provincial budgets. And it's supposed to cover all these things. We had the white paper on the transformation of health services, and even today when we go back and read that paper again from cover to cover, it speaks to primary health care and what should happen in primary health care. Because when we look at the hydrogenic elements, it not just talks about what should happen in the facility, but it also talks about the outreach. That the clinic must have an outreach team, the clinic must have a relationship with the school health team, and also there. So I just want to, I'm going to be brief to you, don't worry. Why we as national, together with the provinces, engineered this continuous quality improvement program and identified the issue so specifically? It's because of the country, we got a big shock in 2012 when HSC revealed its baseline, all the results, and the only facility in the whole country of Prince Anne Hospital that met those standards was the psychiatric hospital, the Veteran Hospital in the Free State. And not only that the facilities didn't meet the standards, so many of them were shown to be in dire straits. Now, if we may shortchange ourselves when we ask for budgets as provinces in 1994, we do yearly meet with our provincial and national treasuries. And I think this should be the way forward, certainly in the 10x10 as health. National and the provinces and the nine treasuries and the national treasuries. We're looking at this, we work with the treasury to fund the package, but also how the package must be delivered. So I think we should rather work with a collective of 10 to identify the things where we have shortfalls and motivate for it. Now, in terms of the implementation, if provinces feel that yes, they had to have IVO clinics, but there's now a new methodology of arriving at it.
deal with the problems is that they take the existing clinical providers. The existing people who call themselves as quality assurance workers, because in a department, there's nobody doing quality assurance, it's the office. We are responsible for quality improvement, national and the province. Those people, because the bodies are there. And they were supposed to be organized into the district development team. So the Amira Clinic actually did not ask for additional resources, but what I'm saying, I recognize that provinces might have been short on budget in any case. But we should work together with the treasury team to motivate specifically where we need additional funding. Thank you, Chief.
Hello, thank you very much, Chair. Free State is the fifth province from yesterday to come in front of the Competence and Court to come in and make a presentation. So I think Mr. Mashalela is correct. Myself also, because we don't want to pursue anything. I did that up, I said, okay. So when we close, I will refer on that. And in some of the, why we are calling provinces all nine provinces is because we really want to have an understanding and feel of what is taking place. It doesn't mean that this process is now substituting our program of going now physically, because we'll be going physically looking into this, and we want that to be again. So we because it's really really very difficult to compare, but we're talking about you as a state. So I want you to take that comment in the mind. And lastly, as we'll be moving, is that in all these endeavors and all these programs and projects that we are putting in place, is that we are dealing with that's how I say, I didn't talk otherwise, we are correcting a system that has disadvantage of people. So the system is in the center here. System of ensuring that everybody is receiving a treatment, health workers are attending to our people have any respect of health workers, our people respect clinics as their own. I don't know that question or the previous one said that communities must not say it's government or say it is our own. So all these endeavors, we are these programs, we are trying to do that, and ourselves will ensure that the mandate that we are given, that we play an oversight in the department of national ensuring that we achieve that goal. And thank you very much for being patient. We will expect that information. We will then see if we are to go for a full-blown oversight, we will do that. We will inform you on time so that you are able to prepare. But this is not the end, but the beginning of our interaction. Because all of us, national, public, and local government, we are to come together in ensuring that we change the face of the health sector in this country. And I think as we are doing that, we do all the things because we want to reach that goal of the national health insurance at the end. That is our mind. Thank you very much. You will get you do have the numbers of the secretariat for the other information. Simplify, but have all the relevant information that we need. Thank you very much. Anything much. Do you want, is there something that you wanted to respond to? Oh.
No, Honourable Chair. I thought if Honourable Chair releases us, it's also fine, because I thought there were 14 other questions that were outstanding.
Can we do this? Because we submit these questions. In fact, respond to those questions and submit the response to Ms. Machalamba. Ms. Machalamba will stipulate all those to us as members of the group. We feel free to come back if we're not here, but feel free to respond if you need them to me. Okay. Thank you.